There seem to be divisions in Reuben. Verse 16, why abodest thou among the sheepfolds? To hear the bleatings of the flock? For the divisions of Reuben, there were great searchings of heart. Now, the word Reuben means see a son. And as we've had before, it speaks of faith, that is, faith to become a son of God. But here, we see that this division is not good. Anytime that there are divisions, it is not a healthy atmosphere. It's not a healthy and spiritual place at all. There is no real edification. So there's an indication that something is wrong with Reuben. And ask the question, why did you abide among the sheepfolds? Just to hear the bleatings of the flock? Verse 17, Gilead abode beyond Jordan. And why did Dan remain in ships? So there seems to be some questions concerning the others, as though they did not come out to the battle. God won a great victory anyway, but the teaching is the same, that everyone does not come out to the battle. And you find that in our own situation. Everyone does not really come out to the battle as being a full overcomer. Though all have the opportunity and the invitation, yet all of them do not come out. And this is, of course, why that there are different ranks in the church, is because that there are overcomers and there are non-overcomers. Well, anyway, Gilead abode beyond Jordan, and Dan, he remained in his ships. Asher continued on the seashore and abode in his breaches, or in his creeks. Seems to indicate that these had something else to do. Verse 18, Zebulun and Naphtali were a people that jeoparded their lives unto the death in the high places of the field. So here again, you find some overcomers out of Israel. They even jeoparded their own lives, and it corresponds with the entire attitude of the Apostle Paul when he said, neither count I my life dear unto myself, you see, but completely poured out unto the Lord. And this should be the attitude that we have in this world today. Verse 19, the kings came and fought the kings of Canaan in Taanach by the waters of Megiddo. They took no gain of money. Now, this Megiddo is mentioned in the prophecy lessons, and it will be a very important place in the end time. In verse 20, as I said before, this seems to be such an indication of the battles and things of the end time, and I believe it's brought out more emphatically in these last few verses. They fought from heaven. The stars in their courses fought against Sisera. And you'll find in the end time, the great tribulation, how that God is literally going to fight from heaven against these people. And I really, that's not hard for me to understand concerning the elements that are going to be against them and the things that scientists even predict concerning the planets and so forth. So this fighting from heaven is really no surprise at all, because it just seems to be a fulfillment. Of the projection that the scientists are making today. Verse 21, the river of Kishon swept them away, that ancient river, the river Kishon. The word Kishon means to bind or to lay a snare. And notice that it was this river that swept them away. And this simply tells us that the nations are going to be caught in their own devices. And that's not hard to imagine either, because right now they're so afraid that somebody's going to lay on the wrong button and annihilate everyone. They have enough energy to destroy the entire world, so they'll actually be swept away in the river Kishon, or in their own snare, or in their own trap. Notice again in verse 22, then were the horse hooves broken by means of the prancings. This is again the same thing, that the nation's strength will actually be broken by their own rumblings. In other words, they're afraid of their own weapons. They have got some weapons that undoubtedly you and I don't even know anything about, but they're afraid of this warfare, and they're trying to sign agreements. No, we won't use any nuclear weapons, and we'll sign an arms agreement and things like this, you see, because they're afraid of that. So their horse hooves, or their own power and their strength, is broken by means of the prancings of the youth. Curse you, Meroz, said the angel of the Lord. Curse you bitterly, the inhabitants thereof, because they came not to the help of the Lord, to the help of the Lord against the mighty. But verse 24, blessed be the woman Jael, blessed above women shall Jael, the wife of Heber the Kenite, be. And then I was impressed, blessed shall she be above women in the tent. And what I was so impressed with this woman is that she just abode in her place, and God used her there. And this is very important for us. God will use you better in the place where He's put you. This is where you'll be the greatest blessing. If He's put you in a tent, then stay there, because you'll be a greater blessing there than anywhere else. It's a good thing that Jael wasn't off chasing foxes somewhere or something else out of her place. She was abiding in the tent, and God used her in that place. Verse 31, let all the enemies perish, O Lord, but let them that love Him be as the sun when he goes forth in his might. The land had rest 40 years. And so again, in the end time, it will be a message and in behalf of the Lord, let thine enemies perish. And they surely will. All enemies that rise up against God and against his people, Israel, they're going to perish. All right, chapter 6, the children of Israel did evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord delivered them in the hand of Midian 7 years. So again, this cycle is repeated. And verse 2, the hand of Midian prevailed against Israel, and because the Midianites, the children of Israel, made them dens, which are in the mountains, caves, and strongholds. The word Midian means strife or contention, and you will find the answer to it in 1 Corinthians 1 and verse 11. Paul writes concerning the strife that is among those people, and how it is a very undesirable condition. There can be no real growth. He says, for this cause there are many who are weak and sickly among you, and many sleep. And so it is not a healthy condition whenever there is bickering and strife and contention in a meeting. It's very undesirable indeed, must be judged. And there is a way of victory over Midian, as we will find here. Verse 3, so when Israel had sown, the Midianites came up, the Amalekites, they came up against them. Verse 4, they encamped against them, and they destroyed the increase of the earth. And you will find this, where contention and rivalry and strife reigns, there is a destroying of spiritual increase. There is no real fruit that is manifest unto the Lord and unto other people. Verse 6 is another condition, the same condition rather, expressed in another way. Israel was greatly impoverished because of the strife or the Midianites that were there, and they cried unto the Lord. Well, this is the first step to victory when such conditions prevail, is to cry unto the Lord. It came to pass when Israel cried to the Lord because of the Midianites, the Lord sent a prophet to the children of Israel and said, thus saith the Lord God of Israel, I brought you up from Egypt and brought you forth out of the house of bondage. If you'll ever notice how many times Israel cried unto the Lord and how many times the Lord came right back to them, I brought you up out of the land of Egypt and out of that bondage there. He wanted to continually remind them of his grace and what he had done. All right, verse 11. Then there came an angel of the Lord and sat under an oak. Now, I believe that this angel was actually the Lord himself, just the way that the word reads here. Had some things that were said. But an important thing is that the angel appeared unto Gideon at this particular place. So where was he? All right, he sat under an oak. Yeah, the angel came here, and we will find who was here in just a little bit. But sitting under the oak, which was in Ophrah. Ophrah means dust. And any time you see in the oak in the Scripture, it always signifies strength. And so this oak being in Ophrah, it tells us of the strength out of weakness, and we're very familiar with that order. And it pertained unto Joash. That means the despairing one. And here's where that we must come to also. The despairing of the flesh and of self. That is, that we just come and have no confidence in our own flesh. And I must say that God is very faithful to bring us unto that place. He will bring us through experiences and situations that so many times we have no control over. We feel so helpless. And he intends it to be exactly that way, because he does not want us to think that we deliver ourselves. And so we just despair of the flesh. All right. and his son Gideon threshed wheat by the winepress. All right. Gideon means my cutter down. And he lived up to that name because he went and cut down the altars of Baal, as we will notice. But notice what this man was doing. He was threshing wheat by the winepress. Now, the wheat was very scarce in those days because the Midianites came up and destroyed it. And, of course, the wheat speaks of the wonders of and the fruitfulness of the Word of God, sowing wheat, even in our lives. We have such an attitude toward the cross. So he did it to hide it from the Midianites. Now, don't be deceived. He was not hiding it because he was afraid of them. He was actually hiding it by faith. Now, he had a certain reverential fear. And this is one thing that we want to realize, that there is one thing to have the fear of respect. There is quite another to have a fear to turn tail and run. I might explain it this way. We have a big cutter over there in the shop. And I'm not so scared of that thing that I turn it off and walk out the door and never use it. But I'm telling you one thing. I do have a very much fear of respect for that thing, because it can slice a finger off and you'd never even know it, or a whole hand. So this is what we mean. This would be the attitude. Angels rush in, or fools rush in where angels fear to tread. Well, this was the way with Gideon. He had a fear of respect for his enemy, and I'm telling you, we better have a fear of respect for our enemy, the devil, because he's stronger than we are, he's smarter than we are, and we just must beware of him. Well, in verse 12, the angel of the Lord appeared unto Gideon, and he said to him, the Lord is with thee. What does he say? Thou mighty man of valor. This does not sound like a man that was trembling in his boots because he was so fearful and going to run away. He had a respect for his enemy, but he also had faith in God, and the combination is very good. Verse 13, Gideon said to him, O my Lord, if the Lord be with us, why is this befallen us? And he was at a crossroads, it seems. Well, Lord, if you're really for us, then why has all this come upon us? And we feel the same way. Lord, if you're really working in my life and working for my good and things of this nature, then why is all of this prevailing? In verse 13, verse 14, the Lord looked upon him and said, go in this thy might. Now that look was the strength of Gideon. That was the might that God gave unto him. You can compare this, Isaiah 66:2, how the Lord looks upon people. And look upon the humble and the contrite. Well, this is the way with Gideon. And God looked upon him, and he said, this is your might, and this is your strength. You shall save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have not I sent thee? He said unto him, O my Lord, wherewith shall I save Israel? Behold, my family is poor in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's house. Now he sounds like the Apostle Paul when he proclaimed, I am less than the least of all saints. And this is a good attitude to have, where that we see our own insufficiency and weakness and reach out for the grace of God. And this is what this man did. Verse 19, again, he remembered the cross. Gideon went in, he made ready a kid, unleavened cakes of an ephah of flour. The flesh he put in a basket, he put the broth in a pot and brought it out unto him under the oak, presented it. And so the angel said, take the flesh and the unleavened cakes and lay them upon this rock and pour out the broth. And he did so, and the angel put forth the end of the staff that was in his hand, touched the flesh, and the fire rose up and it consumed all of that. And so notice that he recognized Calvary as the basis of his victory. Verse 25, he still needed some encouragement. It came to pass that same night the Lord said unto him, take thy father's young bull, the second bull of seven years old, and throw down the altar of Baal that thy father has, cut down the grove that is by it. Now this is one thing that I was much impressed, that Gideon even had to go against his own family at this point, to be true unto the Lord and to do what God had said. His father was an idolater, but that didn't mean that Gideon had to be an idolater. He was a man of faith, and God used him in such a wonderful way. Taking the second bull of 7 years seems to indicate a new creation, even the second man, Adam, which was Christ himself. All right. Verse 26, he built an altar unto the Lord upon the top of this rock in the ordered place, and he offered that bull. And again, he remembers Calvary at this point. Now, also, we want to notice that just the negative action of destruction is not enough. He tore down the altar of Baal, but at the same time, he built another altar unto God. And you'll find in our own experience, it is not sufficient to have the negative side of salvation. That is, quit all of those ungodly deeds that you've been doing. This is half, and this is what most people concentrate on. The real victory is in building the altar of God, and that simply means that our lives become a place of worship for the Lord. And this is where the real victory is. Not just in the negative destruction of the altars of Baal. All right, so he built another altar, and then he still wanted to know the will of God. Verse 37, he says, I'll put a fleece of wool on the floor, and if the dew be on the fleece only, and it is dry on the earth beside, I'll know that you sent me. And God did that. Now, this is where the common term of fleecing came from. And it simply means that people put out a certain sign. Said, now, Lord, if such and such such happens, then I'll know this is your will. Well, this is really not the way of faith. We should, God speaks unto our hearts and we know something, then really it is not the way of faith to seek after a sign. But it is far better to seek after a sign than to be out of the will of God. And so if you feel like that you want to do a little fleecing, that don't mean fleecing the sheep for money, But if you want to do a little fleecing and ascertaining the will of God, then that is fine. This also has another application for us, meaning that we would be the fleece. And even though everything else is dry all around, yet God's blessing or God's dew can be upon us. Well, chapter 7, Gideon is, he continues to go on. And the Lord continues to encourage him. And I think that this is the way that God deals with us. He would have us step out by faith, and we agree to do that to the best that we know how, to the best that we can trust the Lord. And yet we still need his encouragement all along the way. He doesn't just come to us and speak to our hearts, I want you to do this. All right, I'll be glad to do that. Here we go. Because it just doesn't work this way. We are human, and we have many misgivings at various times, especially when God will call upon us to take a terrific responsibility over something. And so we continue to need the encouragement and the blessing of the Lord. Well, Gideon found that in this next chapter. First in verse 1 of chapter 7, Jerubbaal, who is Gideon, and Jerubbaal means idol challenger, and this is what he did. And all the people that were with him, they rose up early and pitched beside the well of Herod. Now this seems to, again, give us the attitude of Israel. And it's not a very good attitude, because Herod means trembling. And this is the well which by which they were camped. It was not a good well, like Beersheba, the well of the oath, but it was a well of trembling. It simply means that they had their eyes on their own circumstances, which actually would cause them to fear. And the host of the Midianites was on the north the north side by the hill of Moreh. That means object of fear. So there are two strikes against them, we might say, at this particular point. But the Lord said to Gideon, verse 2, the people that are with you are too many for me to give them in the hand of the Midianites, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me, saying, mine own hand hath saved me. And you will find that God cuts us down to nothing, so that we won't have that attitude that our own hands have saved us, that we have delivered ourselves. God will, we've had this over and over, and Paul sums it up so well in the New Testament when he says that no flesh should glory in his presence. God will not have that. The only glory is going to be of Christ and what he has done on the cross. So he would not have Israel saying their own hands had saved them. Verse 3. Therefore, go to proclaim in the ears of the people. The first thing, anybody that's afraid, let him go home. Well, this was the first rule of warfare, you remember. We found out in Deuteronomy, and so they went home. Well, 22,000 of them went home. And there remained 10,000. Now, that's a pretty big cut. The Lord said in verse 4, the people are still too many. And if I'd have been Gideon, I think I'd have said, Lord, what are you talking about? You've already reduced it to a third. But he brought them down to the water, and those that lapped like a dog were set by themselves, and those that got down on their, verse 6, number of them that lapped putting their hand to their mouth were 300 men. The rest of the people bowed down upon their knees to drink water. Now, one group drank in a very natural way. And those of you that have been out in the open know what that is. You just get right down flat of your belly and drink to your heart's content. The unnatural way is to get down and to dip it up with your hand. This is what happened here. Notice verse 6, the number of them that lapped putting their hands to their mouth were only 300 men. Now, this is significant because it tells us that, first of all, undoubtedly this water came from the well of Herod, which means that these people just plunged their eyes right into their fearful circumstances and drank fully of their of what was against them. And you find people that way today. They just drink in their troubles and just have their eyes doting on them continually and just continually taking in their troubles unto themselves. And that's all that they can see. Now, another way that we can see this is that some people would bow to their own appetites. Whatever they would feel like and whatever they would see and whatever they feel that their needs were will plunge right into it. Now then, on the other hand, those 300 that put their hands to their mouths, it signifies that they have their eyes on their enemy. They don't plunge down there looking at their own sloppy expression in the water and their reflection there, you see, in their own troubles. They realize the trouble is there, we might say, but they have power of hand over what they take. And so it should be with us. We know that the trouble is there, the situation is there, and yet not looking at our reflection, but rather dipping and having power of hand over what we have. Also power of hand over our own appetites and what we need and so on. Well, anyway, he says, by these 300 men I'm going to deliver you. Verse 9, came to pass the same night, the Lord said to him, arise, get thee down the host, I have delivered it into thine hand. But if you fear to go, take Phurah with you. Phurah means growth. And so you see how that he continued to encourage Gideon. And this is what I said a little while ago, that when God gives us some added responsibilities and we're not quite ready to take them, but he knows our hearts, he knows that we want to yield to him, he will continue to encourage us and to invite us to go right on and give others to help us in those responsibilities. Verse 13, when Gideon was come, behold, there was a man that told a dream unto his fellow and said, behold, I dreamed a dream, and lo, a cake of barley bread tumbled in the host of Midian, came into a tent and smote it that it fell and overturned it that the tent lay long. And the fellow gave him the interpretation and said, this is nothing else save the sword of Gideon, the son of Joash, a man of Israel, and in his hand with God delivered Midian. Verse 15, it was so, when Gideon heard the telling of the dream and the interpretation, he worshipped, returned unto the host of Israel, and said, arise, the Lord has delivered into your hand the host of Midian. You see how that God continued to lead this man and to encourage him. He didn't just say, all right, Gideon, come on, just quit fooling around, get out there and take the victory like I told you to do. You see, now this is the way that people would do, and this is the way that we would do when we get a little short with people. But God continues to lead us along. He knows our frailties. He knows our weaknesses. And he just continued to encourage him and to give him these wonderful blessings and assurances that he was in the will of God and what God was going to do. Well, it was enough, and he speaks wonderful words of faith when he says that God has delivered. God hadn't done it yet. But he says, the Lord has delivered. So this is the victory that he took by faith, and this is the way that we do it. Well, the actual victory in verse 19, Gideon and the 100 men that were with him came at the outside of the camp in the beginning of the middle watch, and they had newly but set the watch. They blew the trumpets and broke the pitchers. Now, he divided these 300 men into three companies, which would be 100 in a company, which compassed these people on three sides, evidently. Verse 20, the three companies blew the trumpets, they broke the pitchers, and held the lamps in their hands, and the trumpets in their right hands to blow withal, and they cried, the sword of the Lord and of Gideon. Now, apparently, they didn't actually have any swords. This is the way that I take it here. simply because that they had a pitcher or a